This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt is just a host, but also realtors with Oakland Realty in downtown Vancouver. So excited for today. We've got Bob Ransford on the program. He is the VP of Development at Century Group. And today we're talking development in Surrey.
That's right. Yeah, it's an interesting conversation for a few different reasons. One, Bob's been in the game for 36 years, I think. Don't quote me, but he's been in the game for a long time. So it's great getting his perspective on the current market conditions. But longtime listeners will remember Sean Hodgins from Century Group as well. Right. This was the Tawasin project. We talked about agricultural urbanism a while back. And what I remember from that conversation, it really stuck with me, was they have this very specific Century Group, I'm saying, has a very specific take on how they can develop homes to build community. And the interesting thing about today's conversation is not only are we talking about the market and Surrey's transformation and what the future of Surrey holds, we're talking about transit-oriented development, concrete towers, but how you can still build community and take, you know, a certain kind of tact to building community in these highly densified neighborhoods in Surrey and other places across Metro Vancouver. And it really reminded me of their approach in Tawasin. So it's a really, really interesting conversation.
Yeah. And I think I mentioned to you off air, but I spent an afternoon recently at Southlands in Tawasin, and mind-blowing experience. Like the amount of kids and mixed different age groups. So you've got like the boomer crowd, you've got young families, you've got a lot of mixed.
They call them downsizers. They call them downsizers.
I call them boomsizers.
The boomer crowd. The boomer crowd.
Anyways, downsizers, Matt. Thanks. So there's townhomes, there's fully detached homes, there's multifamily. There's some of the most beautiful commercial spaces I think I've ever seen. Like just terrific.
And those townhomes are beautiful as well. Like it's
all of them. All of it is just really well executed, I would say. And the other thing about it is the Four Winds Brewery, great lunch, great place to sit back and enjoy. So yeah, I was impressed. I mean, I left there thinking I could live here.
Yeah. Well, and today we're talking, you know, kind of about their Century City development, which is entirely different. And we don't really spend too much time talking specifics about that development, but more about why they are investing in Surrey, what the vision looks like in the next 10 years. So it's a great conversation.
But before we get to this conversation, Matt, we have the MLA Newswire Weekly. This is a pre-sale update brought to you by the MLA Canada Advisory Team. This week's headline, Matt: Q3 pre-sale results signal buying opportunity moving into 2025.
Yeah, this is a lot like our conversation last week with Ben Smith from Avesdo. So per Zonda Urban, there were just shy of 2,000 sales of new construction homes in all of Metro Vancouver over the third quarter. To put this into perspective, Adam, 2,000 pre-sales is 40% below the long-term quarterly sales average of about 3,500. Pre-sales. So well below the norm. And at the end of this same time period, there were approximately 14,000 new construction homes for sale or completed and unsold. So what does this spell? This spells lots of inventory and not a lot of sales, which is always an opportunity for buyers.
Yeah, Matt. And with the current market conditions leveling out, going into the end of the year, it's likely that we're going to see inventory continue to pile up, especially when spring 2025 launches come to fruition. So, I mean, there's two minds here. There's either that you're going to see developers pause and wait until 2025. So the next big push of inventory is coming in 2025, or we're going to be seeing some launches that sit, but there is going to be a set of fixed, relatively fixed inventory moving into the spring market. So this could be a good time for buyers to consider pre-sale as rates come down, specifically for completed homes that developers are extra motivated to sell and get off their books. And one thing that we talked about and one thing that MLA is saying is that at this time, the incentives are incredible and developers are willing to throw in up to 10% of the purchase price as a credit.
That's shocking, right? So a lot of the incentives right now you see are 5% decorating allowances. You see those all over the Lower Mainland.
Well, and this is the thing, right? So when you buy brand new, you get the 2-5-10, the full duration of the 2-5-10 warranty. You get a brand new home, right? And the nice thing about that is obviously it's great to be the first one to kind of collect keys on brand new construction. But the flip side of that is that often you're paying 20% plus more than properties already built in that specific location, right? So a 10% negotiation, I mean, that makes pre-sale really start to make sense.
Really start to make sense. And the only other thing I'd say is, not to toot our own horns here before we toot MLAs, but the what do we call it? The Sklina Brothers podcast key from a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. One of the key takeaways was look for completed homes. And you know what? MLA sells a lot of new construction and that's what they're saying too. So I'm not saying we beat them to the punch, but...
No, but developers want to get those homes off their books.
There's a buying opportunity right now, that's for sure.
It makes sense. So Matt, if you want a hot takeaway like the one you just heard, subscribe to MLA Newswire, a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. Visit MLACanada.com and subscribe now. And Matt, we are also sponsored by our real estate team, Sklina Real Estate in Vancouver, and a new site that we've just launched, which we're so excited
about.
We're pausing
the listings, Adam, for the next couple of weeks to get the word out.
The listings machine is still in full swing, but really this is...
Somebody left it on overnight, actually.
It's been all weekend it was gone. Okay, but here's the thing. This is a super exciting site. It's the only real estate platform out there licensed by TransLink. Matt, skytraincondo.ca, also known as Skytrain Condo Living. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so this is our new website that we're really excited about. It's basically, you know, it comes out of the idea that we've, you know, been doing the show for a decade plus, well, not a decade plus, close to a decade. And nearly every person we have on, we say, what would you buy? Where and what would you buy? And almost inevitably, they say, buy, you know, follow the SkyTrain lines. You know, whatever community, follow the SkyTrain lines. The future is transit-oriented development. SkyTrain Living is a platform that allows you to search by SkyTrain station, along SkyTrain lines, or pre-sale and newer construction within about a 5-minute walk.
Right.
So SkyTrain Condo Living is basically making it easy for anyone interested in either purchasing a home or an investment near a SkyTrain as easy as pie, and at skytraincondo.ca.
Yeah, sign up and get updates on the latest pre-sale and also be kept in the loop. So moving forward, because like we just talked about, in the MLA Newswire weekly update, there are opportunities in pre-sale right now, 100%. So super exciting. Matt, without further ado, why don't we cut to this conversation with Bob Ransford?
Yeah, this is a great one. Enjoy.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that has been around for nearly 4 decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it is also making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Coma Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular, with 85% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-beds all the way to 3-bedroom homes remaining.
For a limited time, you can own a home at Elmwood with a 5% total deposit and 5% purchaser incentive.
Wow, now that's an incentive. Sales Gallery is closing soon for Elmwood. Don't miss your opportunity to own there. Learn more at markon.ca/Elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Sohnhouse, Markon's newest community that features a West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Sohnhouse offers 165 junior to three-bedroom homes in West Coquitlam that integrates nature into the built environment.
Register today at sohnhouse.markon.ca. That's sohnhaus.markon.ca. Or visit the display center at Outpost in Port Moody.
Markon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Bob Ransford, Century Group's Vice President of Development. How you doing, Bob?
Great to be here.
Yeah, well, thanks. Thanks for taking the time, Bob. To start, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I've been in the urban development business for 36 years now. I started out before I was in the urban development business. I worked as a journalist, and then I spent some time working in politics, and I ended up in the urban development business, as I say, 36 years ago. And I've been associated with Century Group, where I'm the VP of development here now, for off and on for probably about 30 of those years. I'm on my second tour of official duty working for them for the past 9 years. And I worked back in 2000 for them for a year and was a consultant to them for a number of years. So the association's a long one.
Is there like a clear through line in your mind between journalism, politics, and urban development?
Yeah, you know, I've always all my life been intrigued with community. I'm a fourth generation resident of Steveston in my family. My family went there just after the turn of the 20th century, and I still live in Steveston. And Steveston is a small community, you know, in a now much larger city of Richmond, but it was a very small village when I grew up, and I always knew my sense of place. I always understood where I came from. I knew the people that I, you know, lived close to. It was a place that I felt very comfortable in, and I often thought about what makes community. Like, there's sort of two aspects of community. There's the physical aspect, the built form, and how a community is designed, and so on. And then there's how people are engaged. And I think the two are very much connected. I think people who feel good about the physical form of their community, places that people can encounter each other on a daily basis, get to know their neighbors really well, you know, shop locally, all of those things add to a sense of belonging and a sense of trust of that place. And I've always been intrigued by that. And I've, since I was a kid, I remember thinking about, no, how come my dad knew that person, and how come my grandparents, you know, knew that person for a long time, and what were their associations in that community and all of that? And that always intrigued me. And I started to really understand that a lot of it had to do with the physical form of the places where we live and how you get engaged, how a citizen is engaged. That's the other part of it, the journalism and the politics.
Right.
Yeah. If you care about the place that you live, you're going to be an active voice in that community. You're going to get engaged. You're going to go to meetings. You're going to stand up and protest things. You're going to do things that you believe are important to make, show that you care about the place. And so that's how I got involved in politics. And you know, and I like to express myself. So I got involved in journalism. And it was when I got involved in journalism in high school, I was writing about a development issue in my community that was something that I believed in and was supporting. And so it's always been a part of my life, that connection between the physical form of a place where you live and how you're engaged in that place.
You know, one thing, and this was a while back, it must have been over a year ago, but we had Sean Hodgins on the show talking about the Southlands community, which you guys are developing. And, you know, more so than we talked to a lot of people in the development community, but that conversation sticks out to me in large part because of what you're talking about. Like, it's very much rooted in the history of that area, the kind of agricultural background, and really kind of a thoughtful addition, which kind of speaks to what you're talking about.
That's why I'm here. Sean and I click. We both have the same approach to community. And, you know, I worked for his father for a period of time, and his father, you know, came to Tawasin when there wasn't much Tawasin there. And he built a lot of that community and he cared about it. And I think, you know, the next generation, Sean, that passion was passed through with Sean. And, you know, when we started talking about Southlands and developing a really model community there, we both were on the same wavelength. We both thought about it the very same way and what we were trying to create. I'm very proud of that place. And I'm passionate about my involvement in it for over 30 years. I've been involved in that project, and it's part of me. It's part of my DNA now.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Well, as much as I'd like to talk about that, I'm...
One day we will talk about it separately. I'm going to do some writing about it pretty soon, so...
Oh, right on. Okay. Well, why we invited you on was specifically to talk more about the Fraser Valley. You know, Century Group is very active in Surrey. We've done a number of projects around close to SkyTrains. What do you guys like about the Fraser Valley? What do you like about Surrey?
I think what we like about Surrey is Surrey started to emerge about 15, 16 years ago because of transit, because of the extension of the Expo line out to this side of the Fraser River. And you know, Surrey had neighborhoods with defined areas. You know, the neighborhood of Wally was an established neighborhood that transit came to Wally, but there wasn't a lot there other than, you know, some small commercial and a neighborhood that had been there for a long time. And we understood what transit would allow, what it would mean to have a rapid transit system extend out to an area where it hadn't seen growth in a long period of time. And there was kind of a blank slate there with a pretty beautiful location, you know, on the Fraser River and across from New Westminster and all of those kinds of things. And it offered the opportunity to start with a bit of a blank slate. And at that time, I think we've been here now about 16 years planning and building projects. And going back 16 years ago, there was a political leadership in the community that said, look, we want to establish really what has become the second downtown of Metro Vancouver. And so we were here early in the genesis of that idea. And that was exciting. And it still is exciting today because we're going to see even more. You know that by, I think it's the population of Surrey today is that about 601,000 people. And it's estimated that Vancouver's population in 2024 is 681,000. If you can rely on BC stats and the projections that are being made, Surrey's going to surpass Vancouver's population in 2029, when it's estimated that the population will be 785,600 people in Surrey, and Vancouver will be about 6,000 less than that. So that shows you what has happened with the development potential that started to unfold here about 15 or 16 years ago. And, you know, there's very few regions in North America and even in the world that are what we could call binodal regions, where there are more than one city center that defines a metropolitan region. You know, you think about Oakland and San Francisco being one, Minneapolis and St. Paul's in Minnesota. I was in Sydney, Australia a few years ago, and there's now, you know, downtown Sydney and downtown Parramatta are defining that region as a binodal region, two large city centers, you know, separated by 25, 30 miles. And that's really what Metro Vancouver has become with Surrey's growth.
Do you see, so that's interesting because in my mind, I see, or I often think of, you know, all these town centers along the SkyTrain routes, whether it's, you know, Lougheed, Brentwood, Metrotown, sure, Surrey City Center. But in your kind of framing there, there's a clear, like it's going to be downtown Vancouver and Surrey City Center are going to be
the... It's the order of magnitude of the population really at both of those nodes. And the kind of development that's happening. You know, Vancouver has a downtown where it attracts a lot of the office space, even though some of these other transit centers you mentioned, like Brentwood and so on, they do have mixed uses. First of all, Surrey will have three post-secondary institution campuses. It has Quantman Polytechnic, which is in our building at 3 Civic Plaza, and it has SFU, you know, that really started the whole trend to creating a center in Surrey.
Right.
And now UBC is coming out here. So I think that's the distinction of the magnitude and the type of uses that are located in these real larger city nodes.
You know, I think, you know, a lot of the people that listen to our show are kind of mom and pop investor types, or at least historically that's been the case. You know, I like to think a lot of them are kind of looking for opportunities, and clearly I think you're detailing an opportunity here. But can we go back kind of 15, 16 years or even before? You mentioned the Expo line. Can you talk a little bit about the foresight there and really kind of unpack, like, was it the density that was increasing? Was it the clear growth story? Was it an affordability play? Was it all those factors? Was it infrastructure that was going in? Like, what were the things that Century Group and I guess yourself were like, this is, we should be playing in this area?
It really was the transit infrastructure that changed, was the game changer. And the decision that the provincial government made to build Surrey Central Tower and, you know, move the ICBC headquarters there at the time. And eventually, you know, SFU came and occupied that building as well. Those were game changers. Those were showing a real commitment to creating something other than just a transit stop. And, you know, the fact that there's actually three transit stations within a few kilometers in downtown Surrey, you know, that showed that there's some thought went into how the pattern of development could ensue around those transit stations closely spaced in that city center, that future city center area. And, you know, a willingness on the part of the city administration to see growth and to encourage it and to be part of it. One of our developments that we completed in 2017 was the 3 Civic Plaza, which is still the largest tower south of the Fraser at 52 stories, a mixed-use tower. It was a partnership with the City of Surrey Development Corporation. They were our partners. They owned the land. Eventually, we completed the project, which includes a Marriott Autograph Collection hotel, 144-room boutique hotel. They were partners in that, and they decided, look, we accomplished what we wanted. We don't really, as a city, want to own a hotel. So we bought their share out, and we fully own that hotel ourselves now. And, you know, we developed 349 condominium homes there and sold them in that tower with Surrey as a partner, with the city as a partner. That showed a real commitment that the civic government, the community itself, really wanted to see something happen to create this downtown in Surrey.
Can you talk a little bit about, or maybe I'll frame it this way, how important is transit or the idea of transit-oriented development to Century Group from the perspective of investing in projects and especially moving forward? Is that... How important is that?
Here's how I would frame it. What's important to us is creating community, and creating communities where people can easily get around, be in a public realm where the car doesn't dominate, where there's other things that you can enjoy, you know, where you can walk down a path or go to a plaza, have a park in the middle of the town, those kinds of things, and have a mix of uses in buildings so that you're not driving to go to an auto-oriented shopping mall, or you're not having to go across to the other side of the region to go to school. It's all about the alternative to how we develop cities in the 1950s and 60s mm-hmm. with roads connecting everything and everybody driving their own car to get to places. I know some people don't understand this concept of a 15-minute city. It's really not, I don't know what's scary about it to people, but what it's really about is, can I live somewhere where I have everything close at hand and I don't have the worry and the hassle and the cost of having to get a car and drive somewhere to do something that I want to do every single day.
Do you think that commitment to kind of a lifestyle that's not car dependent comes out of, I guess, the multi-generations in Vancouver? Like, that seems like, compared to most places in North America, and I guess Sean's as well, it has those kind of smaller communities where the car has not been as important. You know, the Strathcona fighting against the Chinatown, fighting against the freeway running through into downtown or around downtown or whatever it was. But do you think that that kind of commitment that you've, Century Group has clearly had for, you know, it's not like you guys have been doing this for a year. You've had this commitment for a long time. Does it come out of, you know, being Vancouverites through and through, or Metro Vancouverites through and through?
It comes out of understanding how people can relate to each other in the place where they live. If I get in my car in a garage that has a garage door on it every morning, and at sunrise I back out of that garage and I drive to a parking lot somewhere else at my office, and I go up an elevator and I work in my office, and then at the end of the day I come home and I do the exact reverse of that. I open my car door and I park the car inside and close it and walk into my home, and I've never met the person who lives next door to me. What is life about? Mm-hmm. What is my community about? I made the choice 9 years ago to give up a car. I never thought I would ever do that. I mean, I'd heard the stories that people told me how much freedom you had when you did that. And I kind of thought, it's interesting, but I don't think I would ever do that. My car packed it in 9 years ago. And I thought, well, I'm going to try and get through the summer, and then I'll buy a car when winter comes along. And I bought a transit pass, and I live in Steveston, and I was working in Surrey at that time. And I started using transit to get to work, and I realized how easy it was, how I didn't have to worry as I was sitting there commuting. You know, I wasn't fighting the traffic every day.
Right.
I used to, when I worked downtown, I don't know if you know Buster's Towing, but they tow for the city of
Vancouver.
I knew the owner of Buster's, and he told me, I'm going to put name on one of our impound lot spaces because your car's here so much. I used to park downtown because I worked downtown and I didn't have a permanent parking space, and I would get towed at least once a month, probably sometimes three times a month. And I realized how expensive that was, what a hassle it was. And so anyway, I tried it for a summer. And then when winter came along, I said, well, I'm going to try the winter and see how it goes. And I got through the winter and I've never bought a car again. I joined Moto Co-op and I use a car when I need to. I walk everywhere. I live in Steveston, right in the village. Everything's at hand. I'm a little bit healthier because I walk a lot more. And I don't worry about getting my oil changed, where I'm going to park, if Buster's is going to tow me, my insurance policy has to be renewed, any of those things. And I see my neighbors because I walk down the street to my house and I walk past their house and they're sitting out on their patio and I see them. So that's how I look at it.
And so can you talk a little bit about, I mean, so you personally live in Steveston Village, which is a fantastic spot. When Century Group's building these mixed use towers, you know, you mentioned at the outset, you know, how the built form impacts the creation of community. Can you talk a little bit more about, you know, how you're thinking about creating that community? I guess part of it is near transit, but then the actual built form comes into play.
Well, a lot of it is, again, thinking about how are people going to live there, and not just what do they need in their condominium apartment suite, but what would create community? What would allow them to experience some of the things I just talked about, knowing their neighbor and you know, being able to get from place to place easily and so on. So first of all, location, transit oriented, something that's close to where a transit station is so that they don't have to own a car. And it's very expensive to own a car in a downtown and to park it, and for us to build four levels of underground parking and so on. And you know, the government has now recognized that recently with, mm-hmm. you know, the no longer requirement to build any parking if you're within 800 meters of a high capacity transit station. So that's first. Location is number one. Second is how can in their daily lives, occupying the the kinds of properties that we build, how can they interact with their neighbors? So what kind of common spaces can we create? An apartment building, you know, you're limited because it's a high-rise type of building. So you're going to have a lot of indoor types of spaces. So we create a lot of indoor amenities and a broad spectrum of choices of what you can do, everything from repairing a bike in a bike repair shop in your building to having a common kitchen where, because you live in a smaller suite, you might not be able to invite 7 friends over for dinner, but you can book a common kitchen with a dining space and so on and use that to have a party now and again. We're co-working spaces that we're now including because we know that people sometimes work at home. And if you're living in a 450 square foot studio or 560 square foot one bedroom, you're not going to have a lot of space to sit down and work and do it comfortably. So you can come down, you know, to the lobby or to another floor in the building, and there's a co-working facility there. And we've got, you know, booths where you can make the kind of calls that we're on now and things like that. All, storage, you know, we all have things that we want to store, not just a bike, but we have, you know, things that Christmas decorations and all of those kinds of things. So let's make sure we have enough storage space in the buildings. We're also now putting amenities in the form of commercial places. Well, at our project that we're just building right now at Holland Park and across from King George SkyTrain station, we've just opened a restaurant in the lobby of the first phase, which is a rental building. Mm-hmm. And we run that ourselves called Combine. And it's what I would call a limited service restaurant where in the morning, it's a place where you can actually order from your suite on an app your coffee so that when you're ready to leave for work and you're heading across the street to the transit station, you can stop at Combine and grab your coffee and a pastry to go. At lunchtime, we have a limited lunch service there with salads and sandwiches. And then in the evening, it transforms into a bistro and kind of wine bar type of a operation, all in a very small space in the lobby of this rental apartment building. So we think about all of those opportunities in this project at Holland Park, Century City Holland Park. We're building actually 4 towers next to each other. And between the 4 towers is a courtyard. Well, we've created an orchard and a garden space in the courtyard so that people can grow things there. And we have a greenhouse in the courtyard. And each of the buildings has its own residence patios that look into this courtyard, an outdoor patio. So we create an outdoor space where people can gather and so on. We have the typical fitness rooms and, you know, all of those kinds of things. All of the places where the kind of social activities and social engagement that you would expect in a small village or a small town, we build it in the form of, you know, high-rise buildings and their base of those buildings.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
I think you guys have to be the only developer that's running a small restaurant out of there.
Yeah, it's a restaurant open both to the public and to the residents in the building.
Okay.
It has street front access, a patio out on the sidewalk, and it's in the lobby of the apartment building. So as you're going up to your apartment, you pass by it and go up the elevator. And, you know, we've done similar thing at 3 Civic Plaza, the building that has our Marriott Hotel in it. It has Dominion Bar and Kitchen in the lobby, and it has a Prado Cafe in the lobby, a coffee shop. And that lobby is a shared concourse. Normally when you have different uses in a tower, there's often separate lobbies at 3 Civic Plaza. We said the residents who live in the condominiums, the students that go to the Kwantlen campus, And the people that are staying at the hotel all arrive at one lobby. And in that lobby is a restaurant and a coffee bar. And there's comfortable seating in the lobby. And it's not divided up between, oh, that's the hotel area, that's the residence area. It's one common concourse. So everybody mixes in that lobby. Guests of the hotel, people that live in the condo tower, people that are going to school at Kwantlen Polytechnic.
Yeah, totally different. It's funny, I was just talking to somebody the other day about a building in the West End where, you know, there's separate entrances depending on whether you're an owner or not. And, you know, it's kind of inherently, well, it's obviously exclusionary, but it creates, speaking of the physical form, it creates a feeling, presumably, whether you own or not, that's, you know, that's not necessarily conducive to creating community.
And it's nothing like a small town if you were living, or on a main street if you were living on a main street and you were able to walk down the street to the restaurant or the cafe or whatever. Why do we have to do that just because the form of the building happens to be a tower? Mm-hmm. Why can't we be more innovative and think about planning those spaces so that we have that civic engagement?
Fantastic. Well, so the four towers that you're building right at, the Holland Park, right? You know, that's going to be presumably kind of a 5 to 10 year timeline.
Hopefully not 10 more years. We've got one tower completed and 82% of it's leased up as rental. The second tower is now topped up and it'll be completed in about 11 months from now. It's 82% sold. Those are condos. We have another condo tower planned to be launched for pre-sales soon, and then another rental building. So hopefully it won't take 10 years, but there's at least another 5 or 6 years ahead.
You know, that actually brings me to kind of a different point, but I was going to ask you about the market. How are you guys finding the market, and have you been surprised by this year, how it's played out, inventory levels, sales volumes?
Sales volumes have been disappointing, but not alarming. And I think it's all been, you know, interest rate sensitive.
Right.
I think, you know, we hit an interest rate 6 months ago that was really scary for people. And I think they're still recovering from that, even though we've seen the rates drop again. It's been slow, but not dead. You know, I think that's the best way to describe it. I'm hopeful that with this latest rate adjustment, we're going to see the market come back and we'll see activity. We might not see it before Christmas, but I think in the new year, we probably will.
This is last, like, you know, considering the amount of time you spent in the development industry, does the last, you know, kind of post-COVID, let's say last three, four years with the interest rate increases, does it remind you of any other time in your career? Like, are you like, oh, this feels like whenever?
No, I don't think it's as bad as what I felt much earlier. And I guess was at the end of the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, when we saw the market really crash and the leaky condo and all of that kind of thing happen. No, I don't. We saw one of the most unprecedented low interest rate runs that the market's ever seen for the, you know, about 12 or 14 years of relatively low interest rates. And I think what we're doing now is normalizing. You know, it was scary at the end of the 90s when interest rates had really gone up and, you know, the market came to a crashing halt. I remember projects that I was involved in where we had to do rent-to-own programs because there wasn't a buyer to be found.
Right. So this has got nothing on that.
No.
Because I feel like if you've been, you know, a decade or less, maybe even now, 13, 14 years. Yeah, right. The last three years feels like, yeah, it's definitely a lot different than the first, the last 10 before that. That's for sure.
Yeah.
No, just thinking about, you know, I shouldn't say, I don't want to limit it to the Fraser Valley, actually. But, you know, we often ask people on the show, you know, let's say you have a niece looking to buy a property in Metro Vancouver. Is there an area you're excited about? Is there something you'd say, hey, you definitely, you want to look at this area or along this SkyTrain, or is there a spot that you're really excited about right now that might be interesting for our listeners?
Well, if my niece had money, she probably wouldn't have enough to buy in some of those markets. So that's the relativity test that I would use first. Yeah. I think anywhere within 800 meters of a transit station makes real sense. I think we're going to start to see new projects emerge where, you know, the providing a place to park a car will not happen. And that should bring some affordability advantage to those projects. You know, I think we know where transit's running. It's going to run west out to UBC, and it's going to run east out to Langley. And I think any of those transit nodes along both of those lines are places that you want to think about investing in, because people will want to live next to transit. In Vancouver, there's this whole issue of land use efficiency, and there's only so much land in Vancouver, and the city has finally yielded and realized that there are single family neighborhoods very close to the central business district that you wouldn't find in any other city of its size in the world, mm-hmm. where you would see single family lots within 2 kilometers of the central business district. And, you know, they brought in plans like the Broadway plan and so on that make real sense in terms of more efficient land use. And I think you'll start to see those become very lucrative places to live. But, you know, it's all price relative. If you're in downtown Vancouver and the immediate perimeter of that, or if you're in downtown Surrey in the immediate perimeter of that area, you're going to be paying higher prices than, you know, if you're further out. But I think if I was investing myself, which I'm not right now, but if I was, I'd be looking at, you know, well-planned, transit-oriented, multifamily, mixed-use.
Well, and, you know, just thinking about your guys' current project with 4 towers, like a phased, in my experience at least, and we've talked about it quite a bit on the show, a phased development, you know, generally speaking, if you can get in early on one of those, you know, the first phase, you know, you let the developer continues marketing for, you know, close to a decade. The prices, they're always pushing the prices, you know, presumably transit node. And one of these larger projects like Century Group has is ideal.
Absolutely. And, you know, you should look at which transit node you're looking, you know, you're considering, because it may be that you're at a point where it's the beginning and you have that upside of, you know, the beginning of concentration of growth around that station, or whether it's the last tower and you're paying, you know, higher prices because it's the only land available to continue developing around that transit station.
Are you guys looking further out along the new line, or do you have any plans?
All I can say is our plate is pretty full right now with projects, and we kind of look at, you know, what we're looking 3, 4, 5 years ahead of what can we handle, and we already have that land pretty much secured.
Fair enough. Well, maybe we'll leave it there, Bob. We do have this quick segment called the Five Wire. It's 5 lighthearted questions to end the show. Do you have time to stick around for that?
Sure.
This podcast is brought to you by Spark, the new development sales and marketing platform.
Adam, the stakes have never been higher for launching a condo project, and today's developers and brokerage teams need to leverage the best tools in order to hit their financing thresholds and to sell out their projects.
Spark is an all-in-one sales and marketing software that includes a comprehensive CRM, inventory management, email marketing, and digital contracts. These tools are custom tailored to the pre-sale process to help you capture leads, increase inventory yield, and transact contracts seamlessly.
And here's the best part, Adam. Spark's team is headquartered right here in Yale Town, and they have over 10 years of experience in helping BC-based developers and brokers bring their projects to market.
So if you're selling a new development, you need to check out Spark at spark.re/VREP. That's spark.re/VREP. And remember, Matt, you can't light the pre-sale world on fire without a spark.
One book you've read recently that you'd recommend to our listeners?
I just started reading it last night, and I think it's probably worthwhile book to read. It's called The Adaptable Country, How Canada Can Survive the 21st Century.
Oh, interesting.
And it talks about that the next century is going to be a very challenging one in the world, and that Canada has in the past, in challenging times, been quite flexible. And the author is not sure whether that flexibility is still there in the mindset of Canadians and our governments.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Okay. Canada specific. We don't get Canada specific very often. So that's good.
I just found this book the other day and I started reading it last night, and it's very interesting.
Fantastic. In the last few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
Well, it depends how far.
The car one is one that jumps out.
9 years ago when I gave up my car is probably the big thing.
We'll allow it. What have you been binge watching lately, or a movie recommendation?
Honestly, I haven't watched a movie in a while.
I haven't
had Netflix on for a couple of months.
Probably better for it. And you're reading. More than I can say. Favorite band or music, Bob?
Jazz. Brubeck Brothers. Dave Brubeck, Paul Desmond's old stuff, and the Brubeck Boys' new stuff.
All right. And that's, I'd say, a first for the show as well. Last question for you. Something you have purchased recently for under $1,500 that has had a positive impact on your life?
Oh, that's a hard one.
Well, you know what? One thing I can ask you, because I have never tried, but was thinking of buying, is a Kindle. So, are you reading? Like, is that something you're using?
I'm using it instead
of books.
My iPad and my iPhone. Yeah,
right.
I can't think of anything other than that.
All right. Well, how can people find out more about? You have a number of projects. But we were talking about Holland Park. But how can people find out more about what you're doing, Bob, at Century Group?
Well, go to our website, centurygroup.ca, and you'll see our projects there. Century City, Holland Park, right across from King George SkyTrain Station. There's lots of action there. You can go and have lunch or dinner at Combine Cafe there. And then Southlands is a North American treasure and a real precedent in terms of agricultural urbanism, or if you want to call them agri-hoods.
Right.
I would say anybody who hasn't been there, even if you're not looking for a home, go out and see it. It's very special. It's North America's largest agri-hood, and it's very unique. And it's something that you, I think, will be impressed with.
And you know what? And the look of the townhomes is so, they're stunning. I have a friend who... We overlook it from Point Roberts. He has a cottage in Point Roberts, and it's a stunning community. And actually, I think Adam, who couldn't join us today, just helped somebody purchase in that community. So yeah, big fans for sure.
It's a very special community. Anybody that hasn't seen it, even if you're not looking for a home, it's worth to go and see. You'll be inspired by what urbanism can really be.
100%. Well, thanks so much for your time, Bob. That was great.
Thanks.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Bob Ransford, VP of Development from the Century Group.
Really enjoyed listening to that conversation. I didn't get to be a part of it, but Bob is a very interesting guy and obviously super exciting approach to how Century Group is developing in Metro
Vancouver. You know what was the best part of that conversation? Bob used to be a journalist and he's been in development for 36 years. So very experienced guy. He didn't appear nervous to be on the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. In fact, when we jumped on, he was like, "Hey, how you doing?" Looking off at a computer screen. I kind of sat there for a couple minutes and thought, "Are we about to go?" And I said, "Hey, Bob, are you ready?" He said, "Shoot." And then he just went. I think he might have been doing seven things at the same time. Reminds me of Dustin Woodhouse back in the day where you could hear him parking his car,
up a dirt bike.
while being super eloquent about whatever he was saying. And that's the same with Bob Ransford.
Yeah, Dustin Woodhouse talking about the inverted yield curve while he rips a wheelie. That's Dustin. Dustin Woodhouse in a nutshell. Okay, so Matt, what else do we have before we cut for the day?
Adam? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer. You get VIP presale access. You get deal of the month. You get the back catalog. You get stats, different types of stats, sales ratios. There's basically no reason why you shouldn't be on the LiveWire. We also have, of course, tried and true private client services.
Yeah, Matt, because if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com and click buy with us and sign up your own free account. A lot of people signing up for PCS right now, and I totally understand why. We are in the last quarter here before 2025. A lot of anticipation that 2025 is going to be a busier year. So what a time to be monitoring the market. And Matt, if someone wants to reach out and talk about this market or the sold plan or selling or SkyTrain condo or whatever they want to talk about, or just about what you're up to these days.
You know what? There's lots to talk about right now. You can always try me at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we also have that nonpartisan Kokomo line, info at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
We'll have a great week and we are back next week with another great episode.
Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.